Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Bengal Tiger Podcast. I'm Matthew Bruni, and joining me once again is Shay Dixon. Shay, it's been an eventful week for LSU. It's going to be another eventful week coming up. Obviously, tomorrow is Saturday, so some recruiting news there. And then we got USC versus LSU coming up on Sunday, September 1st. So it's all just culminating this whole offseason into this week.
It is. We have some big recruiting news Saturday with two announcements. Billy and I will have a podcast on that, so check that out. And then starting on Monday, we will have a big promo running on the Bengal Tiger, where if you're not a member yet, it would be the perfect time to join. LSU has the number three class. They're obviously a top 25, top 15 team. That signing up, whether for a month or a year, will carry you through enough time for you to be convinced that the Bengal Tiger is a great place to be article wise on the message boards. We had our first AMA this week, Matty B.
Yes, you did.
Had 400 and something posts in there. We talked about all kinds of stuff. So shout out to everyone at the Bengal Tiger for joining in or just reading along. And we continue to climb in subs. So shout out to everyone who has joined. And if you haven't, or know an LSU fan that would be interested, want to give a gift, anything, now with this season here is the time to do it. So check back on Monday. Check my Twitter at Shay Dixon. Check the site, thebengaltiger.com. But we will be putting out a new promo for kickoff as we celebrate 100 years of Tiger Stadium, Matty B. But again, appreciate everyone who has signed up for the Bengal Tiger. And if you haven't, but you're a member of the YouTube page, get over there. We sure do. We have a lot more members subscribed on YouTube than we do on the Bengal Tiger. Let's try to get some of you LSU fans over there with us so we can hang out daily. And we've got some big news with more site announcements coming in September, very early on in September. So we're pumped about that. But big news out of LSU, or at least the annual news out of LSU before the season, was awarding number 18 and number 7. And they did both. And it's a bit of a double dip. We knew Will Campbell was in 7, and he doesn't get to wear it in games. He'll wear a patch. But Matty B, they gave it 7 on defense. I want to take a wild guess, fans, as to who got it.
It's not Major Burns.
So Harold Perkins will be wearing number 7. Great candidate for it. If he makes some big plays, then add it to the number 7 highlight reel that dominates kind of the YouTube and LSU kind of reels of all the number 7s over time. He's a pretty talented one. So defensively, he will wear number 7. What was he in, 14?
No, he went from 40 as a freshman. He was number 4 last year, and now he's number 7. So
my man's had 3 jerseys in 3 years.
Yeah. So. Sorry for those of y'all who had the
– I thought about
I've
that.
Seen some of those number 40 Perkins jerseys walking around. I've seen 40. I've probably seen 4 too. But, yeah, the 7 Harold Perkins jersey is – once that's up for sale, it's going to sell out immediately.
He'll get his NIL cut. And then number 18, it goes to the leader, the guy who is considered the vet and really, whether on the field, in the locker room, really both. Matty B is kind of the exemplary – football player, the example of who Brian Kelly wants the team to be. I would say that when we went through the predictions, I didn't chime in. I saw on the board people were predicting it. The two people who got selected were the two people who I would have picked. And Greg Penn, your starting middle linebacker, again, year 3 for him starting, will wear 18 on defense. He'll also set up the defense, make the calls, all that from the sideline or relay them. And then on offense, it goes to Josh Williams, who is your veteran on the roster on that side by far the most, eligibility wise. I think he's in his 5th year now.
Emery's on the team too now.
Oh, I forgot. That's true. John Emery would have more experience than him. John Emery is on the 2019 national championship team, but Josh Williams goes from a walk-on to someone who plays a lot to starting to now wearing number 18. So congrats to him. And then congrats to Greg Penn coming out of Dematha. That was a big land up in the East Coast when people didn't really know how it would pan out for him. He was a 4-star linebacker, and he's come in and led the team in tackles, I believe, twice in 2 different seasons. So Blake Baker loves him. That's who recruited him out of high school. And then Blake left, went to Missouri, and now he gets him again here in LSU's 2024 season. But any thoughts on that? I figure that was almost exactly how I thought it would go.
Yeah, I predicted Josh Williams to get it, I think, on the radio or something. I was like, Josh Williams is definitely going to get it. Now, Greg Penn, to me, if they were going to do two number 18s, that makes a lot of sense. I didn't know that they would do two 18s. You know better than me. How many times have they had two 18s?
I don't know. Not many. Usually it's one, but I do think both are deserving.
Yeah, I don't.
And they'll never be on the field at the same time, so it won't matter.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, fine with that. Obviously, fine with Perkins getting seven, even though Will already had it because Will wears it like a patch. So it's cool to have a number seven. And a lot of people I know love number seven on defense specifically because that's kind of people associate the number seven with some of the great defensive players in LSU's, you know, recent history as well.
Perkins is also a fan favorite. He's electrifying to watch. So you're right. The Perkins 7 jerseys will be flying off the rack whenever they go up. But let's dive in here. Look, we are recording this on Friday. They'll have their final practice, fall camp practice, on Saturday. Then they dive full into game week. USC, LSU is next Sunday in Vegas. That kicks off at 6:30 Central Time, but will be televised on ABC. They've got the main crew on it, Kirk, Fowler, Holly Rowe, and everyone will be watching. It's the only game on at that time on it, and it will be televised on ABC, so everyone gets a chance to watch it. We will dive very deep into that next week, Maddie B, as we look at that matchup, but we wanted to do one final fall camp wrap. And last week we kind of talked about things we'd seen, things we'd liked, kind of we went through each position, gave the depth chart. You updated your depth chart. Again, if you want to check it out on the Bengal Tiger, Matty B, if you go to the stories and the news feed, he's got a depth chart in there for offense and defense. Shout out to Matty B, made it to every single practice in a fall camp where it was hot as hell, but Brian Kelly gave more access than he ever has before. So thanks to Kelly and company and Bonnet and the SIDs or Frank or Austin or whoever's involved in drawing that up, because sure did get to watch a lot of LSU football practice this year, much more than ever before. So got a good feel for kind of where they're at least who they have. But in today's podcast, we're going to roll through a few different things. And I wanted to start here. I find, and we don't get to talk to the coordinators during the season, but we did in fall camp, both Joe Sloan, the OC, and then Blake Baker, the DC, and we talked to Brian Kelly twice a week, once a week, however it plays out. I find, and I've always found Brian Kelly to be very honest about where things stood. Like, I could remember when he was asked about the corner situation heading into, I think it was last year. And he was like, hey, I have no idea. And because some of them are transfers, some of them are newcomers, and we haven't had fall camp, so I can't tell you if we're going to be great or be terrible. And I appreciate the honesty. I feel like they've done that again. Like, what stood out to you? Because not everyone out there listening, even the diehard fans, are going to sit through 20 minutes of every press conference. But Blake Baker, I think, because most questions are about how far does this defense come? There's 133 college football teams in FBS. LSU finished 113 on defense. They fire everybody. They bring Blake Baker in. Look, he's been here before. He's been a linebackers coach here before. His wife played soccer here. He went to Tulane. He's from Houston. He considers Louisiana kind of his second home, now his current one. And the guys seem to love him. We'll talk about more of that in a bit. But I thought he was just so honest when asked about how good can this defense be? How much did you erase from how bad it was a year ago? And he said, we're not there yet. We aren't there yet. And I'd appreciate that more than, hey, look, we feel like we're in a good spot. We're going to make waves. You know, last year was last year. He openly admitted it's a lot of the same guys, new coaches. They've had to adjust to us. We've had to learn about them, but he feels like they put the guys in the right spots now. But again, he was reserved and he was honest in saying, I don't know yet how this is going to pan out when we face somebody other than our own offense. And we'll quickly see next weekend. But I do appreciate that honesty. And we did hear it from Brian Kelly. A little bit of good news is that he said, we don't have as many busted coverages as we did a year ago in fall camp, which we saw plenty of during the season. And it was a big reason they were not that great on defense. They would give up massive plays. So you heard every Kelly talk. You heard Sloan and Blake Baker, the two coordinators. Anything to add? What kind of have you taken away where you're like, okay, that gives me a little bit of a glimpse into what those three think about what's coming, and they know better than us.
Yeah, I think the Brian Kelly aspect of it, I think he's actually really optimistic about the defense side of the ball. I think we've talked to a lot of players during this stretch as well, and players maybe more so than coaches in a lot of ways do a lot of coach talk in terms of, you know, everyone loves each other, everybody's communication is great and whatnot. So I always take it with a grain of salt, but I do think it's interesting in the returners, the emphaticness that they have, that they are communicating better. I think the willingness that they want to be coached by this staff is obvious compared to last year. And I'm not saying they didn't want to be coached last year, but last year just didn't feel right in a lot of ways. And so you talk to the players, you talk to the coaches, and overall, I think the defense has a clear identity. I think the defense at this point, I mentioned the last podcast, understands what it wants to do, because it's kind of just going to be really aggressive with Blake Baker. And I think that instills a lot of confidence. I think that gives them a very clear direction going into the year. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. I don't think it's going to be perfect. I don't think they're going to be, you know, jump into like a top 30 defense in the country by any means. But I do think there are logical steps here for them to be in that. You know, if you go by normal statistics, I looked at last year's Missouri team was in the 40 to 50 range in a lot of stats. That would be amazing for LSU if they end up in that 40 to 50 range, if they end up 50 to 60. So yeah, I feel better about this defense because of the identity, because of Blake Baker's seemingly charisma and what he brings to that defense. And I think we're going to see that on a play-by-play basis this year. So in terms of fall camps, I wrote a story recently on my kind of takeaways, I guess. And my first one I had on there was the defensive line being even better than I expected. So I think that's where I start. The linebackers are good. The secondary is still going to be shuffled up a bit. But I think the defensive line being better than I expected is my probably biggest takeaway of a fall camp.
That music to the ears of people who are hoping to see the defensive line take a big step forward. And this is something I've talked about with sources, is that last year, yeah, you had three guys. I mean, were they all top 50 or 100 picks? I mean, Jordan Jefferson, Mekhi Wingo, Mekhi Wingo slipped.
No, they slipped. No, yeah. Mason was obviously high. And then the other two were fourth round, I think.
Okay. Regardless, three talented players, right? They got gas. It wasn't pretty. And they didn't have a D-line coach. Like Brian Kelly said that when the D-line coach went down prior to the season with some health conditions, that they were going to have to put someone there in John Jancic, who had never coached D-line before.
Yeah,
we saw them bring Pete Jenkins in the middle of the season just to help out, kind of lining guys up and everything else. And you could see it just watching games. They would line up 3 yards off the ball at times. And it was like, what's even happening here? From speaking with sources, the talent they have, let's just call it the top three, this year's top three on the interior versus last year. It's not a knock on this year's guys. Last year's were better. They're more talented players. Yeah. Mekhi Wing, I don't have to go through it. Mason Smith, Mekhi Wingo, and Jordan Jefferson were very talented. And you'd feel great about it if those were your three guys this year. But I think that what I've heard from sources and what you just talked about is buying into coaching, knowing where they're supposed to be, a little bit of a rotation, thinks that they feel, and then the play of the front seven and the defense as a whole, that the defense will actually, defensive line-wise, will be more effective this year than it was a year ago. That's great news, considered the interior lost guys that you're now replacing with guys who aren't as, or I don't want to even use talent, don't have the same expectations put on them talent-wise individually. So I think it's tough for people to maybe grasp that, right? That you don't have the same players and they might not be as good, but you might actually be better because of the coaching and where these guys are at.
And even if you extend it to the defensive end spots, I think Savion Jones last year, we can all agree, was a little disappointing. This fall, I think he's been one of the most surprising players to me in terms of the improvements that he's made from last year. I mean, I've seen him take Emory Jones every day almost. And they, you know, win some, lose some, but he goes right at him and he wins a lot of reps. And then he goes at Will Campbell. And even if he doesn't win, he looks good. Like, he looks spry this year. And I think Kevin Peoples as a defensive ends coach is a massive addition that's kind of been underrated in a lot of ways. And then you go on the other side, and I think Braden Swenson's a heck of a lot better than what they had last year with Ovia Gofu. So as a whole, you know, four starting starters, and then you go to the backups. Like, I think the defensive line is in a much better position than I had expected going in. I expected it to be kind of a, you know, figure it out, feel it out situation. But I think it says a lot that also they don't even have to rely on a freshman like Don McKinley. Like, if you would have told me during the summer they didn't need Don McKinley to come in and play immediately, I would have been like, that's good. That's refreshing. That means that people are stepping up, and that's been the case. JVR Suggs has stepped up. Jalen Lee stepped up. You know, Sean Womack off the edge has been solid. So they have a good, I think, two deep on the defensive line that they feel good about.
We're doing a little kind of our expectations for each side of the ball here. We always deviate from the original planner. We were going to go offense first.
I told you I didn't even read the planner. So I was
we'll start defense. That's where we're at. Let's go back to what you said, because I think this is an important starting point. I'll give the stats for people who don't know. Yes, it was a historically bad defense, yardage-wise, point-wise, however you want to break it down, for LSU a year ago under Matt House and that regime, who were all let go. They finished 90th in total defense, giving up 368 yards a game. If you want to go points, they were in the hundreds. And the year prior, though, in 2021, which is the year that, and you've noted this a good bit, where transfers at DB actually worked, like Makai Garner or Jared Bernard Converse, those guys bailed them out. Yep. And they gave up 354 yards a game. So that put them at 41 overall. So I think that's obviously not a big gap. I think it maybe be easier just to tell you what the scoring defense was for both those 2 years. So in 2023, LSU scoring defense, Matty B, let's see, gave up, I should say, 28 points a game, something in that range. Let's see. Let me make sure I have all this right. Yes. Okay. In last year, I'm sorry, I mixed up my numbers. Last year, they finished 108th out of 133 in total defense. 416 yards a game is what they allowed. Yeah. The year prior, in 2022, which would have been Brian Kelly's first season, Matt House's first season, they were at 453. No, that's offense. See, this is bad. I clicked on to defense, and
they only allowed 22 points per game their first year. So, I mean, they were substantially.
Let's see, 41. Yeah, 354 yards a game. And then you mentioned the points. So they went from a top 50 defense to well outside of the top 100 and looked awful. Awful enough for Brian Kelly after two seasons to fire everyone that coached on that side of the ball. They were very transfer dependent as they tried to rebuild a roster, and some hit, some didn't. They bring a five-star like Denver Harrison, never plays, basically leaves. He's at UTSA now. So I think they're back to the high school development, which is a good thing. And you just patch it with transfers, and we're seeing them do that now at D tackle, right? Gio Paez comes in, Suggs comes in. These are guys that are expected to start in Gio's case and then be in the rotation for a guy like Suggs. So you still are leaning on the portal a bit, but much more they're trending back to developing high school guys, which I think is the key, as do many people out there, college coaches I talk to. Just from I want to talk to kind of from a very macro, or, you know, 1,000-foot view, whatever, macro level, not getting into the weeds too much. Just there's the numbers. They finished 108 in defense last year. Where do they need to be to be considered, all right, that'll work? Like, you can win, you're not going to lose games and go to Ole Miss and give up 700 yards and 55 points and lose, even though you put up 600 and scored 49, your defense couldn't stop anything. Yeah. So if a year ago on defense, they are at 108 and they gave up 416 yards a game. And then scoring defense-wise, they gave up 28 points a game. That ranked 81st nationally, also at the bottom of the SEC. Mm-hmm. Where does that number need to be? Where do you want to see them? Because I've continued to say, just looking at it, top 60 defense to me would be a massive turnaround. And is that too lofty? Because that's almost saying, hey, Blake Baker and guys, like, cut in half how bad it was last year from being 108 to number one. Like, meet me in the middle somewhere. So I say top 60. A year ago, a top 60 defense would have given up 25 points a game, so a field goal less, and a field goal can win you many games. There'll be games where it'll be a field goal spread. And then yardage-wise, which I guess ultimately, yes, points matter the most, but yardage-wise last year, giving up 415 yards, a top 60 defense would have given up in the 370 range. So giving up about 45, 50 yards less a game. Is that outlandish to think, given a lot of these guys, Maddie B, are the same guys that were there last year, but you've watched them in camp, and I'll just add what sources have said. They've bought into Blake Baker. They've bought into their position coaches. And reflecting back, I think that was a big issue from talking to sources, talking to coaches, even on the record. They don't feel like that they had bought in last year in year two of Matt House. And as things unraveled, the buy-in became less. And with Blake Baker, it seems there's some renewed energy there of, will they be the best defense in the country? Will they be the old school LSU defenses? No, I don't think that. But I do think that there has to be, and there will be, a step forward. Am I being too demanding here to say I'd like to see a top 60 defense, that you shave off 50 points and three points a game, 50 yards and three points a game?
So I did a story on, I did a story looking at how much better the defense has to get in relation to the offense, which the offense we expect to be, you know, at the very least a top 10 offense in the country. And
ooh, that's bold.
I think it's definitely a top 10 offense.
We'll get to that. Okay, so let's stick on defense.
Look, you're trying to mess up the planner already. We're trying to jump to offense now. But defensively, if that's the case, if they do have a top 10 offense, you do need to have, I looked up, you know, Missouri's last season, I think it's comparable. I looked up the SP Plus numbers and stuff like that. And basically all that is to say, by the traditional stats that like that you read, right? The points, the yards, all that stuff, without getting too deep into the weeds, I do think 50 to 60 range is where you're going to have to be in most instances. Now, honestly, if they're outside the top 10 on offense, that I think it has to be even higher. I think you have to, honestly, the pressure that's going to be put on this defense, if the offense cannot reach a top 10 level, might be too great for it. So no, I don't think you're wrong in putting those expectations for it. But I do think it's interesting when talking about this defense, it's also important that the offense doesn't take a significant step back, because then it's all for naught anyways. But regardless, I think you're in the right ballpark. 50 to 60 range will get them to what I think could be either a really impressive 10-2, or maybe, you know, at the very least a 9-3 season if they have a top 60 defense.
And again, it doesn't seem like a lot, right? Like 40 to 50 yards less a game and a field goal less a game would get you to a top 60 defense if you're basing it off of how kind of each year unfolds and looking at last year. So I don't think that's too wild. And as you mentioned, Missouri.
Last year, the collapses felt just so significant with the defense. It was Florida State, 45 points. It was Ole Miss, 49. Missouri, 39. Arkansas somehow scores 31.
And they won the Missouri game.
Yeah, and they won the Missouri game.
Pick at the end.
Somehow scores 31 on you. Florida scores 35 on you. It was like A&M with third string quarterback scores 30 on you. It just never felt like they were able to patch any holes. And so even with some of the highs, like I guess you could say Auburn game, Army game, you know, they had good defensive games, Georgia State, but it was like against the best teams, they had no answers. And so this year, you just want them to have some answers against those top teams. And we'll see right away with USC.
What is the kind of, we're in just general expectation-wise is kind of what we're touching on here. Is there a, you mentioned D-line, a bit of an improvement. I think everybody's just going to ask about expectations at defensive back. I know it's, you want predictions, you want all this. I think they're going to be better at DB than they were a year ago. I think that they'll be better coached at the position. I think that Ashton Stamps, guys like that, will have more time. You know, I've had time to develop. I can't, I'm just not going to buy into the camp that Sage and Major and these guys who are vets and were kind of on the wrong, the receiving end of some bad defensive showings last year are going to not improve to some degree. And look, Sage is back at corner and he may move back to safety, but Major is in a new position. He's playing that star role closer to the line. I think that the DBs will be better. I don't think that they're going to give up those busted plays that they did a year ago. And I mentioned that earlier kind of in jest, but Brian Kelly very seriously was like, I can say that in practice, we haven't seen them give up busted plays at the rate that they did a year ago, which if they were seeing it in fall camp a year ago, that was sort of a harbinger of what was to come because it happened every single game, it seems. So I'd have to think these DBs are going to be better. I've always been a Stamps fan. I like PJ Woodland. I want to see him come along. No one's talking about Jordan Gilbert. He's played a lot of football at A&M. He's back home now. Like, does he make a bigger impact at safety than the combo of Andre Sam and Major Burns? I think he could, yes. Jordan Allen's a guy that is going to play a good bit that the defensive staff seems to have some faith in. I said it last week. You loved him and coming out of LCA in high school.
Yeah.
Are you with me that, look, they were terrible, so yes, they should be better. But I don't think it will be as glaringly bad as it was a year ago.
Yeah, I think also something that we've talked about kind of in and out, but I do think the Major Burns position change is significant. I think Sage Ryan is kind of the player that I mentioned last week in terms of how they use him could, in theory, you know, kind of figure out, he could piece things together, right? If Sage Ryan's better at safety, then they'll move around Jordan Allen. If he's better at corner, then I think they leave him there until he gets burned. But usually he's in good position. Usually those veterans don't get completely like busted coverages or give up just obviously easy touchdowns. But overall, the secondary is still where my concerns are with this defense. I feel great about the linebackers. I feel good enough about the defensive line. The secondary is what has to prove it. Major Burns is going to have to prove it, even though he is in a different position. Jordan Gilbert, yeah, he had a good year 2 years ago, but the spring was hit or miss. Like, he's going to have to prove it. You know, Jordan Allen, I liked him out of high school. 2 years, hadn't done much, and I wouldn't say he's the highest ceiling player, but he is someone that is physical and can do what they need him to do. So there's,
and this is his first real opportunity. He really didn't play before this.
Yes. So we'll see what Jordan Allen can do and what he can't do. So, and then you have a lot of young guys that are chomping at the bit as well to get on the field. So
Kylan Jackson, Deshaun Spears, like we could see those guys this year out there.
The secondary is where my questions are right now. And it's up to Blake Baker in this scheme to not, I don't want to say protect them because that sounds like you're either dropping more into coverage or playing zones or whatnot. And he's not going to do that. He's going to be aggressive. He's going to blitz. So he's going to try to help them by making the opposing quarterback uncomfortable. And if it works, then I feel great. But obviously it's a big if in terms of helping this defensive backfield out.
I'll wrap up the defensive talk with this. And obviously every week this season, we'll be talking about game previews, reactions, all that. So we'll dive into the nuances, but when I was talking to a source right before we did this podcast, I asked, what are a couple things you'd say about the defense? Because I want to get a good feel for what maybe happens after practice with all that you see in the film room, all these things. And the two things were buy-in to Blake Baker. The buy-in is there to the defense and the defensive coaches. Bo Davis, you mentioned Kevin Peoples, Corey Raymond, Jake Olson is the safeties coach. Like, there's real buy-in there. But then also, and this was something you talked about from the day Blake Baker got hired and something that you wanted to see, from Missouri carry over to here, and it has, is aggressiveness. And for better or worse, Blake Baker is an aggressive defensive style coach. And with this team, he is being aggressive. That is one thing that they said first and foremost, and we've seen it in camp. They'll just send people. They're getting after Nussmeier every single time. So I think much more than during the past few years of Matt House, that Blake Baker is going to, his scheme is built to be more aggressive. And you saw it at Missouri. That's one thing you talked about when he got hired, was if they bring this here, it could really change the trajectory of the defense.
Yeah. The last thing I'll say is I think Harold Perkins has a phenomenal season. I think that changes.
Perk 7.
I think it changes the complexion of this defense in a lot of ways, having him unlocked in a way. And I don't know what that looks like statistically, like how many sacks that looks like or how exactly they use him. I know he's going to blitz a lot. I know he's going to be aggressive, but what that looks like and the impact of that might not even be felt statistically or tangibly like in that way, but it's going to, I think Brian Kelly summed it up best in terms of saying Harold Perkins has elevated those around him for the first time in his career this fall, this offseason. And that's what I think is going to be the biggest impact of Harold Perkins at inside linebacker, is that he's not going to be playing Sam/nickel out there in coverage, right? And where he blitzes once every four dropbacks or something. He's not just going to be playing off the edge. He is going to be playing in a position that can open up lanes for the defensive ends, for Major Burns, for Greg Penn.
Like, yeah, right.
He's going to be helping people. So I think it's a big year from Harold Perkins. Whether that shows, I think he's going to have the best statistical season he had, but how lofty those numbers are, I don't know. But he's going to just, his impact will be felt.
And whether at middle backer or, as Blake Baker said, moving Perkins around,
yeah,
I go with what you said. It may not show up on the stats, like at the end of a game, but it will show up on Greg Penn's stat sheet or Major Burns's, to where teams will say, there's Harold, let's audible real quick. We're going the other way with this one. And then Major makes a play, or Greg Penn makes a play, or Savion Jones, your DN, makes a play. So I do think I'm with you there. Even if his stats aren't through the roof every game, he will do so much to help others. So defensively, we'll see. Again, no need to make bold predictions. I want to see it first. And
yeah,
they start out with USC. Let's see how it goes. It's a talented team, top 25. A very formidable early test for this defense to see where they're at. If you want to go to that game, Maddie B, Game Time is the way to do it. Download the Game Time app if you haven't. I know most of you have, but if you're listening and you still have not downloaded the Game Time app, it's free. Go into your app store, type in Game Time, download the app. That gets you started. We've got the promo code for you. It's ON3, ON3. And you'll get $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. But that's your redeem code when you check out. ON3. Very simple. ON, the number 3. You'll get $20 off. I know some people are still waiting kind of for day of to see if Vegas tickets drop. I think they probably will. But you've got the Nichols game to kick things off in Tiger Stadium. And LSU's already announced a sellout for the season. 100 years of Tiger Stadium. You'll want to get there at some point, obviously, to sit in the stands for that 100-year celebration. Bama plays here in November in Tiger Stadium. Ole Miss is going to be a massive game where potentially both teams go early in the season undefeated into that game.
Top 10
and
game.
And that's the day that they celebrate former players coming back, 100 years of Tiger Stadium, full celebration, games at night. So if you want to go ahead and check out Game Time tickets now, browse through that. But I would get ahead on some of these, or at least kind of mark it down and make sure you're checking them often. But take the guesswork out of buying your tickets. And that's what Game Time does. Again, download the app, Game Time app, create your account, use ON3, ON3, get $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, just ON3, that'll get you $20 off. Download Game Time today. Get you everywhere, really, Maddie B. You could go see a play. You could go see basketball. The Pels will start back up sooner than later. You can go watch your Spurs play, whatever you want to do. Game Time. For me, I've been using Game Time for years now, and they by far have the best deals. I bought concert tickets off them the past two shows that I went to, between Pearl Jam and then another one this spring. So Shout out to Game Time for being a sponsor. Let's jump to offense. And so fewer questions, I feel, than defense. But let's start it the same that a year ago, you were the number one offense in college football. You had two first-round picks at receiver. You had the number two overall pick in the draft in Jaden Daniels. You had a Heisman winner at quarterback. And they finished the season averaging 543 yards a game. That was the most in the country. There was nobody better than LSU's offense. Not Oregon, not Oklahoma, not even Chadwell and Liberty. It was LSU. They lost a bunch of games and didn't make a New Year's Six Bowl or the playoffs because they didn't play good defense. But they were excellent on offense. And you've got some carryover here. Yes, Mike Denbrock, your OC, is at Notre Dame now. But Joselyn was the quarterback's coach. He was in all those meetings. Hankton's still here as the receivers coach and pass game coordinator, co-OC. Brad Davis is back as O-line coach. Frank Wilson, obviously, at running backs coach. So they're even with the loss of Denbrock, I think that it's a pretty seamless transition with Joe Sloan. And you know that Brian Kelly will oversee things and, you know, won't let – I don't expect a major drop-off there. I did not expect you to say that you thought that they would be a top 10 offense. And I'm not knocking them. I don't think that they can't reach that. But top 10 offense would be a year ago, Southern Cal, number 10 offense, 467 yards a game. So – about 80 yards fewer a game than LSU, but still put them into the top 10. Scoring-wise, a top 10 defense. Number 10 would have been Kansas State. They were at 37 points a game. LSU at 46. Absolutely ridiculous. Also number one. So much like we did with defense. And to give you a little more perspective here, your first year here was the 2021, right?
Yep.
So that was the Max Johnson year. LSU that year averaged 26 points a game, 27, that put them at 80th in the country. So a big dip there from what you got from Max to what you got from Jaden in year one to Jaden just blowing up and tearing it apart in year two. Garrett Nussmeier, first-time starter. He started the bowl game, but first time he gets to start from game one until the end. He's a vet. A lot of the pieces, like O-line's all there, running back, you got the same pieces, except Caleb Jackson is now a sophomore and is going to be more experienced for you. You've got some great tight ends, Mason Taylor, and then two really promising ones in Pimpton and Green. Receiver-wise, I think, yeah, you can say there's question marks because, like, any time Malik Nabers, think of every receiver that ever played at LSU. Malik Nabers played 3 years, didn't even play in every game. He missed a couple.
Yeah,
and he owns LSU's all-time receiving record and all-time receiving yards and touchdowns. So not just him, but also Brian Thomas, first-round pick. Both guys go over 1,000 yards. It feels almost like when you lost Jefferson and Chase, and you had Marshall on that 2019 team. So you lose pieces, but they bring in a 1,000-yard receiver and a transfer in C.J. Daniels out of Liberty, who I just mentioned as a top-five offense a year ago. You've got Kyron Lacy, your number three from a year ago. You've got Chris Hilton as a veteran who's healthy now and clearly ready to go. And you landed a couple of really nice transfers. Xavion Thomas this past year out of state. He comes back home to Louisiana. Another guy 2 years ago came home to Louisiana from Bama. And Aaron Anderson, he's finally healthy, so that's big. They're deeper. We talked about that last week. We think that they will use more guys, tight ends and receiver-wise, than they did a year ago when they leaned so heavily on kind of that top group. But how do you break down – we can talk about receivers in a second, but that certainly factors in, as does Nussmeier, to where you say top 10 offense, you think that this is an offense capable of scoring, let's just call it 35-plus points a game.
Yes, I do. I think they, first of all, they play with really good pace. So I think they're going to continue what they did last year. I think they're going to be able to put pressure on defenses consistently. And I think this is substantially more of a versatile offense than it was last year. Now, obviously,
it has to be.
Yeah, versatility doesn't mean effectiveness, right? I'm not saying they're going to be more effective than last year's offense, because last year's offense could just kill you with the top end talent that they had. But from a run game perspective, which is still my biggest question mark going into it, is how the run game looks. And we talked about that last podcast. I still expect it to be better than what it was the last 2 years with Jackson and Williams now, and an offensive line that is older. So the run game is there. I think you laid out all the talent on this team. I think they are old enough. They're mature enough. Nussmeier is a lot of people's hold up here. And my contention is, based on what we've seen, I think Garrett Nussmeier not only has the arm talent, but I think he has the awareness to make more throws this year than I think we've seen him make in years past. And I understand it wasn't the keys. He didn't have the keys to the car last year, the year before that when he faced Georgia. But the talent is there, and with them scheming their offense around him, I think that they have a much better chance at creating more big plays, not than last year, but than what people think when they look at this offense. So I think the big plays are still going to be there. I think the run game is still going to be there. And then you mentioned tight ends. I think that they're going to find a way to make an in-between game that ultimately just makes them a top 10 offense. I can't see 10 offenses being better than what LSU has, especially not in personnel. Offensive line, they're top three in the country. Quarterback, my opinion, top 10 in the country. Wide receiver, they're top 10 in the country. So I don't – tight end, they're top probably five in the country. So I don't know. I think if Joe Sloan and Cortez Hankton and Brian Kelly can collectively come together and, you know, not have a drop-off in terms of ideology or schematics or anything like that, I think they are comfortably in line to be a top 10 offense this year.
The difference between LSU scoring 45 a game a year ago to lead the country and a top, which I said I'd like to see him be a top 25 offense. 25 was A&M. They scored 33 a game, so you're talking 12 points. It's a good amount of points. That is obviously a massive swing. It's a much bigger gap than what I'm saying I'd like to see the defense do, from just shave off 3 points a game.
I would
three yeah. to 7 points a game will move you from 108th defense to a top 50 defense. Offense, I think that if there is that, that's what I'm kind of making my point as. If they can stay as a top 25 offense, which maybe that means you score 35 a game, let's just call it something in that range, but you shave off those 3 to 4 to 5 points on defense and you become a top 60 defense, that trade-off to me is better than being the best offense in the country and
I don't know if it's enough to if, again, the goal in my mind is to get to a playoff, even 9 wins. I mean, that's, if they're 20th in offense and 60th in defense, that's not a team that might be an 8-4 team. Like, I don't know. Like, I think they're better, like, offensively, and we not without going through everybody, but, like, in theory, it's like Tennessee, right, with, like, Nico and guys like that. Like, I think they're better than, like, Tennessee. I think they're better than, like, Oklahoma. You know, Ole Miss is probably one that, like, is on the same plateau to me in terms of, like, guys they have returning and top-end talent at receiver and stuff like that. It's a really interesting mix, but I think if they drop outside the top 10 on offense, it's going to be more substantial than what we think, than what a lot of people think, because that would be a significant drop. And that means Nussmeier is not near what I think he is. And that would be very, very concerning.
46 points a game is just so many, right? I mean, to be number one, you cannot expect that.
No.
It's the same stuff I said after 2019. You lose all those NFL players, you're going to have a step back. Are you more set up to rebound or kind of embrace that this year than you were then? Maybe so. They weren't great in 2020. Yeah, 2020, the COVID year, kind of messed everything up. But they were a bad defense then. That was the Pelini defense for a year before they moved on, and then Matt House came in. But again, maybe, okay, so top 60 defense, top 50 defense is what I said I'd like to see them have. Again, if you're right, a top 10 offense would get you 35 points a game. A top 25 offense would get you 33. So let's just call it 30. They need to score more than 32 points a game.
31. I see what you're saying from a point standpoint. It's not significant in terms
defensively,
of
defensively. Yeah,
there.
Defensively. Like,
the number one and two offense top, are way up there.
Yeah, but defensively, like, a top 60 defense last year gave up 25 points a game. So. Yeah. If you can be above 30 and you're holding someone to under 28, I'll I'll take that swap out. Like, I will. I'll take that swap out.
Yeah, I understand, like, conceptually. It's just, I think when you name Texas A&M as the 25th offense last year and thinking about what A&M looks like last year, it's like, in points-wise, maybe it's close, but in actual, like, production-wise, I can't imagine them being, like, anywhere to where, like, and an A&M or a...
This is a bit skewed. This averages every game, as you mentioned.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, when you say, like, good. That team...
Last year, LSU finished in the 80s in total defense scoring, but they allowed 28 points a game. Well, in the games that matter, they weren't holding anyone to 28 points.
So, yeah, exactly. It's skewed, but regardless, I get what you're saying in terms of the margins not being as significant, but I'm going to go back to saying, I think if you just look at it in a vacuum, talent, coaching, and I think quarterback play, I think this is a top 10 offense in the country. And I'd be pretty surprised if they don't end the year as a top 10 offense in most metrics, in most counting stats. Like, if they don't, I think they surpass 35 points a game pretty easily. Again, that's skewed because maybe they score 70 against Nichols, or maybe they only score, you know, 40 against Nichols. I don't know, but I think this is a top 10 offense. I'm pretty confident in that. And if it's not, then Garrett Nussmeier has, I think Nussmeier is the X factor, right? We can talk about him a little bit. He is the swing factor, I guess. You know what you're getting from the offensive line. I mentioned the run game, which I'm still hesitant about, but ultimately Garrett Nussmeier has the keys to the car. How is he going to drive it? That's the question.
You can give your opinion, I'll give mine. Protecting the football. They cannot turn the ball over. You and that gunslinger mentality that makes Nussmeier a really good quarterback and makes him electric at times can also be rough to where, if he's not playing within the offense, if he's not really leaning on his tight ends, which are kind of check down safe throws, and if he's protecting the football, I think you're right. This could be a top 10, 15 offense. If you start turning the ball over, you're going to lose games. Like, Jaden Daniels didn't turn the ball over ever. And in his first year here, he never turned it over, but everyone was like, well, you're not aggressive enough. You don't throw it downfield. You don't do enough. Well, everyone shut up after that last year, because he ran it and he threw it over the middle and he threw it deep and he still didn't turn it over. So he went number two in the draft for a reason. I like Nussmeier. I think he's going to be a very good quarterback. I think he's being slept on, but I think we have to acknowledge the unknowns, right? That, yeah, we saw him play one game, but how does it look over the course of a season? And I just think minimizing turnovers is going to be a massive part. I'd rank that for me one. 1A even. 1B would be, can you run the football successfully with your running backs? And Brian Kelly's first two seasons, they haven't had to do that to the point they have this year because they had Jaden. He'd run it. Nuss isn't going to do that. So are you able to open up the offense enough to where running the football and knocking out 5-6 yards a run is something that's within reach? I think it is, but I want to see him do it. And I think it's paramount to success.
Yeah. I think I don't really have anything else here on the offense, because I don't know what I really learned about the offense throughout the fall, which was interesting. It was a lot about the defense, but, like, offensively, we know the offensive line is awesome. We know the receivers are awesome. Nussmeier, like I said, swing factor, run game, another swing factor there. But overall, I think we're going to learn a lot this first game.
I always tell, and I put it in a Louisiana perspective quite often, most of these guys, minus CJ Daniel, all of them are Louisiana guys at receiver. But Louisiana gives you receivers, and I point to examples like, even in the quote-unquote down year at receiver, and you've got Russell Gage as your starter, or DJ Chark's your real go-to guy, those guys play in the NFL still. Like, great players. So let me, quick lightning round here. Kyron Lacy will play in the NFL, yes or no?
Yes.
CJ Daniels.
Yeah.
Chris Hilton.
Probably.
Yeah. Xavion Thomas.
Probably.
Aaron Anderson's kind of in that mix. And then you've got younger guys. Look, we've heard good things about Kyle Parker. I guess my point being is they still
Kylan Billiott, though. I love
him. He's young. He's a true freshman.
I know. I'm just going to call my shot now so we can pull it in 3 years.
Yeah, there you go. Or pull it if he comes out this year. One thing, though, and let's wrap up here. tight end.
Yeah.
They lose Mac Markway. He was their second. He was their number two tight end last year. He was a blocker for him, really. He scored a touchdown, but he was a blocker. Mason Taylor is going to be leaned on so heavily, and that's a good thing. He is talented. He's in year three. He's got NFL bloodlines. He's been in the big moments. He caught the ball and got across the goal line to beat Bama in overtime when you decide to go for two and risk it all as a true freshman 2 years ago. So built for these type of moments, yes. And we saw that Wisconsin put up 80 yards, caught eight balls, didn't drop anything. Like, great number one tight end. I kept telling you, press the pause button, Matty B, on Pimpton. Press the pause button on Green. I don't, you know, Tre'Davious Green. These are your 2 6 foot six plus tight ends that are unbelievable pass catchers, unbelievable pass catch radius, complete mismatches for anyone linebacker or DB wise that attempts to cover them. And you said, look, I think these guys will have big years. I think they'll be used. And I said, I don't know. And maybe I was just stuck in my Jaden Daniels mode of he wasn't even using Mason Taylor. I talked to a source this morning who assured me, did not even ask about this one, who said, watch out. This tight end room is the best in the country. Mason Taylor is going to be legit, but Pimpton has come a long way with his blocking. He can be that number two tight end. And then I just didn't believe when you were saying, look, Tre'Davious Green can make some plays this year for him. Yeah, but will they let him have that chance? Let me tell you this, coming straight from someone who would know, Tre'Davious Green is going to be out there every game. So this is an offense that not just receiver and running back wise, tight end is going to be a major, major point of emphasis. And they want that, right? When Brian Kelly got here, we knew he was a 12 personnel guy. When you can run a couple tight ends out there and one of them be a Green or put Green and Pimpton out there at the same time, when you've already got a great kind of multifaceted all-purpose tight end and Mason Taylor starting, there's not many teams that can do that. Georgia maybe can do that, but there aren't a lot of teams out there that are going to run out the tight ends that LSU does. That wasn't on my bingo card. I knew they're talented. I didn't think that they were going to go into the season saying, we feel really good about using these guys. You did. I had some doubts.
Well, I maintained it was that Pimpton and Green kind of would help set the ceiling for this offense. Like if they can unlock them, which was a question mark in the offseason. It was, I did think Pimpton needed, you know, to continue to develop, which he has. I mean, give him full credit there. But then Green, just out of high school, there's a reason he was a five-star. There's a reason he was just a basketball player turned football player. That's phenomenal to watch. Those two set the ceiling for this offense. And I think that was a correct assessment. And I think that we're going to see this year that they're going to make a couple plays here and there. Not, you know, they're not going to make three catches each a game, but they're going to make a couple plays here and there that show you that defenses can't really match up with them consistently. Like you can maybe shade to them a little bit, but then you have Kyron Lacy hitting you over the top. But then you have Chris Hilton hitting you over the top. It's just the weapons of this offense are on a different level of anything we've seen. Now I'm not saying they're going to have two top, you know, first round receivers or two top 20 receivers like they had last year, but 1 through 10 in terms of options you have as an offense, this is going to be the deepest skill position rooms plural that they've had since 2019. Like I think that's obvious. So I feel really good about that. Now it's like I said, it's up to Nussmeier to deliver them the ball.
Protect the football, I think, is the key for Nuss. And we'll see it right away against USC. Minimize the turnovers.
I predicted 8 interceptions before fall camp, even. I think if he's 10 or below, I'm still okay-ish. If he is still obviously making the play, like the completion percentage is high, like he's making the throws. I said 8 before the fall. If he ends the year with 8, I still feel pretty damn good. 10, we're getting a little hesitant. Anything more than that, I think, is obviously not great because then you're talking about like
30 touchdowns. Nobody in the SEC last year threw only one threw more than 10. Devin Leary at Kentucky threw 12 picks last year. Yeah. Peyton Thorne at Auburn threw 10. KJ Jefferson and Rattler at South Carolina and Arkansas threw 8. AJ Swan at Vandy threw 7. He's now Nussmeier's backup. But Brady Cook, Beck, Max Johnson at A&M, Joe Milton, Jackson Dart, all those guys were in the 5 to 6 range of interceptions on the year. So,
yeah. So I said 8, I'll probably stick with like 8, I think is a fair, assuming that he is going to have the touchdown numbers that balance that out. He's not throwing just, 20 touchdowns to 8 interceptions or something like that. He's going to be in the higher 20s probably, or in the 26 to 30 something range. But yeah,
Beck, for instance, was 24-6 last year for Georgia.
Yeah, something like that ratio is what I would expect.
Jackson Dart was 23-5. Milroe at Bama was 23-6. So that's the range you're shooting for.
Exactly.
I like it.
It's not Jaden Daniels, who only had, what was it?
Goodness
45-3 or something like that last
40-4.
Yeah.
Nobody else in the SEC threw more than 23 touchdowns. No, Devin Leary threw 25. He was 25-12.
That's
no one. So he threw 15 more touchdowns than anybody else. And that's throw, not run.
Yeah.
He had a bunch of those too. So
absurd.
And he's the starter. If anyone didn't catch that news or didn't think it was going to happen, they drafted him number 2 for a reason, but he will be the Redskins starter. And you saw the Redskins just traded and got Cade York at kicker. So Jaden Daniels drives him down there, but they need to kick a field goal. Cade York is coming in for it.
There we go.
Redskins, Commanders, whatever they are. Jaden Daniels' team. That's what they are now.
Jaden Daniels' teams. All right. I think that's all we got.
Hey, ball camp's complete. Shout out to Matty B. Every day at practice reports. If you're on the Bengal Tiger again, if you're not, sign up. You will not regret it. We will be very appreciative of it. We hang out there every day. But fans who have been signed up this month know about as much as the coaching staff, I bet, because Matty B had in-depth practice reports from full practices every single day. So shout out to Matty B for that. And we are 9 days away, Matt.
9 days away. Stay tuned. I released my official LSU 2024 season predictions today. Billy is Saturday and Shay is on Sunday. So we're going to release them one at a time there.
I'm just going to watch what y'all do and then I'll pick better than that. I'll say this, and this isn't outlandish as we wrap up. I've asked many people around the program, inside the building, however you want to phrase this. Absolute floor, 8 wins, ceiling 11. That's, I think, what everybody would say is fair.
Yeah.
And I think what Vegas has it at 9.5.
Well, I'll say, 9.5.
And the first two seasons, the past two seasons of Brian Kelly being here, they've won 9 and then won 10 at a bowl game.
Yeah.
You go 10-2, you're making the playoffs.
I agree. I think this is, we'll get into the USC game later, but like I'm penciling in USC as a win. And if that goes wrong, then I'm just going to my prediction and just throw it away, because
it's so key to start off with a win, given we've seen that they've started off the past few years with a loss in week one. And in the Kelly era, back to back with FSU. So they have to get a win, I think, to start off. And the schedule's manageable. UCLA is not that great. We'll go through all this later, but I do think that it's, if you want 10 wins, USC has to be one of the wins.
Correct. 100%. 100%. It's too tough of an SEC slate to do that otherwise. But all right. Subscribe to the Bengal Tiger if you haven't already. Subscribe to our YouTube channel if you haven't already. Leave us a like, comment, and share. Send it to a friend. Let us know what you think in the comments below. What do you think LSU's record is going to be this year? Who are your breakout picks? All that good stuff. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, everything if you haven't already. We appreciate the support, and we will talk to y'all later.